through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Welcome into a Tuesday edition of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Hope you all enjoyed the long weekend. For those of you who had a long weekend, I know we did. And a handful of us were together on Saturday over at CenturyLink Field enjoying the Seattle Dragons XFL home opener, and we had a blast over there.
We did.
It was a great, great time. And it wasn't just, I mean, we had a good time with each other, certainly. But from where we were sitting, we were basically at field level in the south end zone, right in back of the end zone. And Stacy, you know, we looked around at different points in the game. And those towels that they handed out, those orange towels, in the lower bowl, that atmosphere was on, was every bit on par with, I guess, what you would see at a pro game when you see towels whipping around and you see the, or you hear the noise in the stadium. I don't know if anybody knew who the players were, what the situation was, what was at stake, what kind of play or, you know, weird play they were allowing or going for, but everybody was fired up and it was a great atmosphere.
Well, and we'd been, I agree, Tom, and we'd been having this kind of debate about the XFL in general because there was the failure of the AAF and failure in general of alternate football leagues to kind of get going. And so I think it was fair to question, like, okay, do they have enough star power? What's it going to be? They had a very exciting first weekend, but what's this look like moving forward? Going into the game, I, for a Seahawks game, I mean, I get there to the press box earlier, so that's one thing. But for this game, I wasn't going to the press box. We're going, you know, all together as a work group, so I'm not getting there really early. It took me an hour to even get into the parking garage. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, like there are so many more people here than I thought. I get out. I go past a group of people in actual dragon costumes,
right,
like onesies. We get down to the like little red zone suite, which I'd never sat out before. It was so awesome. And then we go out there and any big play, I was just so, if I was a player, I would be so touched and excited with how many people were there for a team that is new. There are a lot of new faces. Yes, there are some former players you recognize, including local guys everyone loves, like Keenan Reynolds, who wasn't able to suit up. But still, for that many people to be out there supporting when all these guys are new to them, it must have felt surreal being on that field.
It was pretty cool to watch. And I wasn't there at the game with you guys. Unfortunately, I was sick. It was not a fun...
Jake was on death's door.
Yeah, it was not a fun weekend. Had the stomach bug go through our family, which was not a fun time for us. But sitting there watching, I'd prefer not. It was not a great one. And it went through our little family, so the four of us. I mean, it was not too fun between all of us. But we were sitting there watching the Dragons game and trying to, you know, lay down and rest and all that. But it was so cool watching, even through the broadcast, you could tell how into it the crowd was and how many people were there. I mean, I thought it was a very great showing for Seattle and for Seattle fans.
Did the Fox broadcast go out of their way to sort of augment what the stadium experience may have been like? Did they do,
you mean
like,
to make it look bigger?
Yeah, did they do, well, did they do wide shots of the crowd with all the towels?
They did.
Did they comment on it? Did they say at any point during the game, boy, this reminds me of a Seahawks game because of all the noise? Because being on the field, let me tell you,
yeah,
it was loud down there.
Well, yeah.
It was really loud.
They were blown away. I mean, they very, very much so were walking away saying this was the best experience that they have had so far. I know it's only 2 weeks, but looking across the XFL and just saying this, you know, without saying it, that this was the best crowd that they have seen so far across the league. And, I mean, it wasn't even close. And they kept bringing that up. And obviously having Brock Heward be a part of the broadcast and pointing out the similarities of, you know, and the familiarity that he's had in this area and with the Seahawks. I think that that was very much highlighted throughout the game, especially in the second half. I mean, when plays were happening, touchdown, you know, finally they got a offensive touchdown in the third quarter. You really start getting some big defensive plays going. I mean, that place was rocking, and it looked like an absolute blast. It was so fun to watch, and I really think that this is a that was a great showing of Seattle fans in the sense that they really rally behind whatever sports team is in town. And I think that there is a togetherness in this community more so than any other places where there it is going to take a lot more time in other places like Los Angeles and even Dallas and New York and these other places because they want to wait and see. Whereas a place like Seattle, one, they love football, but they're about community. And community events like this, I think people really gravitate towards and rally around. And the Dragons had a great opportunity to capitalize on that fan base there.
That's a, you know, that was one of the questions that I wanted to ask today. Not as three questions, but I think you just pretty much hit the nail on the head there. Seattle, even though it's a big city, it feels more like a community than a place like D.C. or L.A. Especially, I mean, when it comes to sports anyway, I mean, maybe there are different issues where you're in L.A. and it feels more like a community. But, yeah, I mean, people do jump on things ahead of time rather than waiting to sit there and say, all right, what's going to develop
here?
I mean, people are out in front of it. The Sounders are known in MLS to have the best crowd of anybody, are they not?
Mm-hmm. They are.
Yeah, and when, part when of that the is- NHL put up their season tickets, right, online,
right.
They were sold out in – I don't know, however many, 30 minutes? I mean, it didn't take long. So this is a town that really gravitates towards it, and I really truly believe, obviously I'm biased because I was born and raised here, but I think it's one of the best sports towns in the U.S. It's not the biggest media markets as compared to New York, but in terms of that community feel and that tie-in and that buy-in that you get, I really think it's special, and it's not just in the Seattle. You know, obviously you talk about Seattle, but you know, it's the greater Seattle area where you feel it down south into Tacoma and Puyallup and all of those, you know, different places and up north. I mean, it's just, it's a place that really brings this entire state together. And so the Dragons, they had a heck of an opportunity with almost 30,000 people there at the game. And did they capitalize on that? I think that they had some great moments and I think that they had some a great fan experience. But did they capitalize on that where people are going to come back again?
I think Seattle, too, has had so many kind of heartbreaking moments with near relocations of the Seahawks and actually the Pilots, but a fear of the Mariners being relocated, actual relocation of the Sonics. And there's just been kind of there's been a lot of heartbreak with Seattle franchises. And I think that now, especially just the sports community in Seattle tries to be very cognizant of we're going to celebrate new teams. And I think that's the approach that they try to take. And obviously there's already a huge Seahawks fandom and that support continues. But I think that I read it as the town being very, very careful to embrace any new teams and prove that, you know, they're going to be a crowd that's there and they're going to be a crowd that supports the team. And it would be great to get even more leagues here.
I counted four former Seahawks on the field, four names that popped up at different times during the game. Do you guys remember who they were?
Yes.
You remember all four, you think? There may have been more. I just counted four.
Can I list them?
Try, yeah.
B.J. Daniels.
Oh, that's set to be five. Okay,
B.J. Daniels, Keenan Reynolds,
two,
Tanner McAvoy,
three,
for the Vipers. Kaysen Williams.
Four.
Isaiah Battle, or was he injured? Was he not out there?
I don't know. If he was there, that would make six, actually.
He's on the roster. He was like Kaysen Williams, on the roster but not playing.
Okay, there's one I'm missing.
There's one more. He, I believe, was a defensive back.
And fullback? Is it him?
Mohamed Cisse.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Ooh.
So there's a lot of former Seahawks on the field yesterday. I mean, I don't know how excited Mohamed Cisse makes you, but when I was walking around the concession area, and I heard actually Mohamed Cisse made a play on Tanner McAvoy. I was like, oh, okay.
That's friendly fire. Lancaster.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't have that.
It made sense. And by the way, just as far as the atmosphere, you know, in the concession area, I thought, like, pricing was affordable. I saw a lot of families there, you know, get your picture taken with the mascots, that type of thing. It was overall just a very positive just experience, I thought.
Driving to the stadium, I commented, I love this crowd. There were people, like, groups of 15 guys running around in full Dragons costumes. All, like, you know, Elysian and Sluggers and all the bars down there, Pyramid, are all packed. It felt, I was like, I don't mind waiting in this traffic to get into Park, which took a little bit of time, but not too much, because it just felt like there was something going on. It's like that feeling when the city comes alive, there's that buzz.
Yeah.
It was cool to feel that in mid-February.
Yeah, because there literally is nothing else going on. You're right. It gives you just a little alternative this time of year.
Okay. Yeah, I think the 2 p.m. start times are also smart.
You know, not only because it would have been freezing. Why they do that? What's the reason for that?
I don't know. Maybe it's something to do with the TV deal that they fit all the games into Saturday and Sunday. I don't know what it is, but I don't mind it at all.
I don't mind it either. I just thought they were trying to be a little bit different than the NFL. Hey, we'll move it up an hour from where it normally is.
Yeah.
The level of play looked acceptable to me outside of the quarterbacks. You guys think that's an issue?
Yeah, I do. I think it's a big issue. When you look at the game itself, I mean, I watched it, and I fully enjoyed watching the Dragons' defense. They're for real. I mean, they fly around. They get after it. I mean, especially behind the crowd, it was a lot of fun to watch that. And I thought you were seeing guys make plays on all three levels of that defense. The defensive line, linebackers, the defensive backs especially had a great day. But ultimately, it comes down to watching offense. You want to watch great offense. You want to watch fun offense. And it doesn't need to be a quarterback that's throwing for four touchdowns or over 300 yards, although that would be nice. But to see an efficient offense and to put points up on the board on a regular basis instead of it looking so difficult. And I think that that was the hard part in terms of the Dragons offense, knowing that, hey, you've got Keenan Reynolds that was open four times down the field at different points, and it was just inaccurate throws. You know, at one point, Kyle, what was the stat at one point in the first half that they had? I think it was they had five first downs.
They had five first downs on 40 total yards of offense. Now, obviously, you account for some sacks and lost yards, but we were looking at that number like, how is this even possible? They have more first downs than they do 10-yard chunks of offense.
I mean, that part of it, you cannot play with that type of offense and continue and expect to see fans just continuing to come out and watch that. You know, you've got to start putting together great offensive drives.
Yeah, I wonder, like, are we going to actually at some point do earnest analysis of these games? Like, that's how far are we going to take that? Yeah, I know you are. Right now, I got three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
We got a great show coming up for you today at 2 o'clock. We will continue on doing our player profiles. Couple of free agents left here. Question about those free agents, though. Is it important to sign certain free agents before others?
And you're meaning this in terms of...
Is there an order, or that
one signing will affect another?
Yeah, okay. Right. Like, do Schneider and Pete say to themselves, okay, we know we want to sign that guy, but first we got to get this guy signed because it somehow affects...
Is there a reason to do it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than just priority in terms of how big those deals are going to be, sometimes. I will say sometimes. And the perfect example I would give is, okay, Frank Clark, Jaron Reed. If those two guys were coming out at the same time, those guys were very close. They were pretty much... I think they weren't in the same draft class. They were right back to back with each other, but they were super close friends. If they were still in contention for both being back with the Seahawks, signing one of those players would have an effect on the other in terms of wanting to come back. But in terms of like a Clowney affecting Jaron Reed to come back to your defensive line, it's not going to have any effect because there's really no prior deep relationship and there wasn't much success on the field together, working together. So sometimes that can be the case. In this particular Seahawks free agent class, there's not really one guy that I could point to that would be a fire starter in terms of getting everybody else or a couple other key signings back to the Seahawks.
Yeah, I agree with Jake. My first thought was, as far as relationships go, it just might be another thing in your favor. Because when you have an undrafted free agent, obviously he can go sign anywhere. And the more things you have, any team can offer him enough money. So you want to be able to say, well, we've got good pieces around you, or well, your best friend plays here. And this isn't an example of a free agent re-signing with both players, but re-signing KJ Wright, I think, played a role, at least whether a small role, a big role, I don't know what it was, but I think it certainly played a role in being able to extend Bobby Wagner. The two of them are incredibly close off the field, and Bobby Wagner spent his entire career playing with KJ Wright. So, you know, it wasn't the biggest factor, but I certainly think it helps for teams to say, we've got this piece. Another theory floated out by both Brock Huard and Jake have been that it might help the Seahawks in re-signing Clowney if they can show, hey, we've got some other pieces here too. So maybe just as important as signing Clowney isn't necessarily signing him first, but signing some reasons for him to play here too.
Jake, did you say the Firestarter?
Yeah.
You remember that song, the Firestarter?
No.
By Britney Spears? Oh, no.
See, here's the thing. With me and music, if you tell me the title or the band name, probably a good shot that I'm not going to get it.
You got to sing
play
it.
The song, there's a good chance I will know it. That's the type of music.
Tom, can you sing it?
I'm not going to. I have it in front of me on YouTube ready to go.
Okay.
But there's some obscenities in this song.
Ah.
So I got to, yeah.
Kyle's really nervous.
Kyle, I've been in your shoes before. You don't need to worry about it, all right? I'll edit before anything goes.
Bad boy, Tommy.
All right. Next.
Number two.
Does the XFL, whether it's a quarterback or whoever, need to cultivate stars to truly succeed?
At some point, yes. In this year, to me, year one is about proof of concept. It's about proof of concept showing that you have these eccentric rules, different rules, and that they can apply and that they're fun, they're exciting to watch, and that also that you have a year of success, meaning that you actually finish the entire year, you pay all your players, there's no drama, the league actually functions like a proper league should. To me, that's the goal of year one. Once you get through year two, that's when you've got to deliver on stars. You've got to deliver on having great quarterback play and actually delivering players that fans know, recognize, and are familiar with. And that inherently is going to happen once you start getting players that come back for year two within their, you know, within their teams in their cities. So that part, I think, will take care of itself. But, yeah, you've got to have true star power for this league to ultimately succeed. Because, like I said, as much fun as it was watching the Seattle Dragons this weekend, and I loved watching the win, and the crowd was rocking. It was an awesome, awesome viewing experience. There was that side of it of watching really bad offensive football that I don't know if I could continue to put myself through throughout an entire season. That's just the reality of it. So hopefully they can get that fixed and cleaned up, because if they can add that, now I think you've got a lot of people hooked and excited to watch.
Yeah, and they can create a few stars. Obviously, you want to see them bring in guys like I don't even know who it would be. You wonder if a guy like RG3 would have come to the XFL instead of signing with a place like Baltimore, or if there are guys that would have wanted, knowing they could get starting reps and lead a team, to go to the XFL. So it remains to be seen, you know, if the league sticks around, maybe some of those guys do filter down to it. But I think it's doing enough to kind of cultivate its own stars for now, that maybe don't have the same stardom, but they're enough that there are names that people are watching, like PJ Walker with the Houston Roughnecks. He was with the Colts, played behind Andrew Luck and Jacoby Brissett, and obviously they just keep two quarterbacks on their roster, but he was, from what I was reading, kind of going back and rereading, someone that I think fans were kind of excited about and looked promising in training camp, but just, you know, they're carrying two quarterbacks. They're not going to keep three guys. So I think he's one candidate for kind of like a breakout player in the new league, but it remains to be seen how high they can shoot as far as stardom.
Speaking of Andrew Luck, you know who was hamming up Andrew Luck's father?
Who's that?
On Saturday?
You?
Our own Curtis Rogers.
No. Curtis Rogers?
No.
Seattle? They did on Saturday. No. They did interview.
Okay, then who, Tom?
Well, if you would shut up, I'll tell you.
We're letting you go.
Dave Wyman.
Really?
When we walked in, you don't remember that? When we first walked in?
No, I made a beeline for the table because there was...
Dave Wyman would not let him go.
Oh,
all over him.
Dave.
Very generous with his time. By the way, Firestarter... Here you go. Turn down the music real quick, Curtis. I'm a fire starter, twisted fire starter.
Oh, yeah, I know the song. Yeah. Yeah, there's not going to be many of those guys in the Seahawks, those fire starters for you. But like Stacey pointed out, for Clowney, it is going to be somebody else outside of the Seahawks free agency that will get Clowney to come back to the Seahawks or more apt to do so.
Next.
Number three.
What's the possibility that the Astros miss the playoffs this year?
I think it's slim, but I think you guys disagree with me.
I wouldn't say guys. I think Tom disagrees.
I think
with
you guy disagrees with me.
I think the Astros are still going to make a playoff run because I look at this situation and say the way that they've handled this all the way through, they've used this as motivation. Like they've been defiant through it all, and I know that they came out with their apologies and all of that. Going into spring training, but I think that within that clubhouse that they're using this as a rallying cry to say, you know what, this is an opportunity for us to go and prove that we can do it without all the cheating, all the scandals. It's us against the world, and sometimes that can be powerful with a very talented team.
I don't buy it. I think
that's what I was waiting to hear.
I think they've lost players. I think it's a distraction. I think it's very likely that they will collapse under the weight of this whole thing. I think they won't be as good because they can't cheat. I see the Rangers taking the division. Look, I think they can still be a good team. Obviously, they've still got a bunch of talent. Win 86, 87 games, maybe even like 91 or 2. But they could come close to not missing the playoffs and maybe miss them altogether.
I don't know.
I really believe that.
It makes sense if I think it's not necessarily not being able to cheat with the scheme they had, but just the fallout of that and the weight of that on their season that might do it. Because I think they still have a lot of the players, a lot of the talent that they needed to get there. And I'm not convinced that a bad team could have their same scheme and win a World Series. I think you have to be pretty good.
I don't think that they're going to be a 68-win team. But think about this. How many Super Bowl losers missed the playoffs altogether the following year? Plenty. And there's a lot of talent in those years after. But oftentimes, there's just too much to deal with. Players start pointing fingers at one another. Hey, you did this, but you did this, and I didn't do that. I mean, I can see a lot of that playing out in a baseball locker room, especially over the course of 162 games.
Maybe. I wonder if they're going to have an us-against-the-world mentality, because they don't seem to feel very sorry. They seem to make it feel like, well, this is an obstacle we'll have to overcome as a team, and we'll show you. And now, you know, we're embracing this role as I don't know if it's the villains or people to – I think they see it more as something they have to overcome than something they should apologize for.
They may see it that way right now, Stacey, but do not underestimate, especially for a baseball team, what a little bit of losing, the type of effect that'll have on a team.
True, but I don't know.
Before they turn against one another.
I fully hear you on that, and that's why it's going to be interesting to watch this team and how much abuse that they're going to take from everybody around the league, players, fans, across the country. It's going to be a lot. But this group, that, like I said, from the very beginning, I felt more defiance than anything else. And I see this with the talented group, maybe them, you know, rallying, but I could see it going either way.
We'll ask Mike Salk about all this next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Happy President's Day, Mikey.
Who's the best president, Tom?
Well, as we were discussing yesterday, no, Millard Fillmore.
He's pretty good.
Yeah.
What?
The pride of Buffalo, New York.
Yeah. He got killed up there, didn't he?
No.
Who was that?
William McKinley.
That's who I meant. He got killed right out in Buffalo. I read a whole book about it.
Yep.
But I guess I forgot who the president was. That's too bad.
William McKinley.
All right.
Anyway.
Call him Mac, though, right?
Well, his friends may have.
They call him Billy Mac.
They call him Billy Mac.
Billy Mac.
Billy Mac.
As we sit here and laugh. What's the... What's the possibility that the Astros are not going to make the playoffs this year because they collapse under the weight of all this nonsense?
There's a chance.
It's not zero.
It's certainly not zero. I mean, look, they're a really good team, but they lost some key pieces, and, you know, they no longer have the help of trash can banging and everything else, and, you know, there will be extra pressure on them. On the other hand, they got some really good players on that team, whether they were getting some signs or not. I mean, I think the world of Bregman and Springer and a few of those other guys, Correa, just as players, not necessarily as people, but as players,
And if their pitching is good, they're going to be right there. The division is a good division. The Angels will be, I think, a little bit better. The A's will be good like they always are. And Rangers will be a little better. The Mariners, I don't know about for this year. But I think they've still got a good chance to be in the postseason.
Oh, sure, they've got a chance to be in it. But these two are telling me there's no doubt they're going to be in it.
Oh, I don't know. There's some doubt. I think there's doubt. There is definitely doubt in it. And there would have been some doubt whether this happened or not, whether this scandal occurred or not. I think there still would have been at least some doubt just because of the natural attrition. But they're a really good baseball team, and if I have to bet, I'd bet on them being in rather than out.
I have a clarifying question for the room. Are we assuming now, as I am after Rob Manfred's press conference, that there was some kind of plea bargain-esque deal where in exchange for all the information they could gather
could
for this investigation, they agreed not to suspend or punish players?
It could be. I got to tell you, we spent some time in this recording the podcast this morning. It'll be out tonight at brockandsalkpodcast.com. I am so sick of the Dodgers players ranting and raving and being all tough guy now about this. Justin Turner and Corey Bellinger. Shut up. Like, now you're super tough about how the Astros did this and the Astros did that. They knew about this at the time. In fact, we know that because of the Washington Post story that came out, last week or the week before, that said the Dodgers knew what was going on, and did they tell anybody in the press about it? Go public, blow the whistle? No. Did they tell the commissioner's office and fight like, no? What did they do? They told their friend, Brian Dozier, who now played for the Nationals, the best way to beat the Astros system. So they cared more about they didn't care about exposing what was really going on. They just kind of kept it within themselves and waited for Mike Fiers to lead the way. And then once the coast was clear, they came jumping in off the top rope like a bunch of fake tough guys.
Do you really think teams knew the extent to which the Astros were taking all of this, though?
Yes,
because what if they thought, really, what if they thought it was just, I don't know how they're doing it, but they're taking signs, and every team knows that they push the line a little bit, so you don't want to call out another team because you might be doing something similar. But once they found out how far they were going,
they knew
it was
bad.
Story.
They knew it was bad enough to give them these tips on using the inside of their hat and watch this and watch that. They knew enough. And look, I'm not saying they're worse. That them getting mad is worse than the Astros. That's a false equivocation. But look, you're coming in off the top rope to pile on and say how awful, you know, the Astros are, how bad the commissioner is. Like, guys, you had every right, just as Mike Fiers did, to try to blow this thing up, and you didn't.
Right. You're right when you call them false tough guys. I get 100% what you're saying there. I do think it helps clarify for the public, though, how bad this is when, for once, other baseball players are calling each other out.
Yeah, but
that adds credibility to the idea that this really affected games.
Yeah. It's
the first people didn't think
but
that.
I don't know, man. All it to me tells is that those guys are easy. They're happy to jump aboard a moving train. And nobody wanted to say, I mean, it's no different from steroids. Everybody knew steroids were going on or rampant across the league, including in their own clubhouses. Did anybody say anything about it? No.
No, but the public still needs to hear about it after the fact from the players. Fake tough guys, absolutely.
But I would sure love to hear Justin Turner instead of railing. Look, here's the other thing. You're going to beat up on the commissioner, and Stacey, maybe you're right, there was some sort of an immunity deal struck or something like that, but the more likely idea is, well, hey, you're the union. The baseball union's the most powerful one in sports. It's one of the most powerful in the country. So the commissioner could have done everything he wanted to try to suspend these guys for it, and the union would have fought him tooth and nail. Oh, by the way, they're about to be in a collective bargaining agreement fight. And so, you know, is he really interested in taking on the union on this when he's trying to get them to come together to make sure there's labor peace in baseball, which is of enormous importance to Rob Manfred to make sure the game continues on? So he really wants to fight with them about this? If Justin Turner and Bellinger and the rest of these guys have such a big problem with it, go to your union and talk to them. But will they do that? Never. They'll never do it. The union will never concede one thing ever. I don't buy it. That's just not the way baseball's ever operated. So these guys can complain all they want and blame the commissioner. But the fact of the matter, and they are right to blame the Astros. I have no problems with that. But when they start complaining about the system, this and that, hey, the union's 50% of it. Feel free to talk to your union and have Tony Clark, all 6'10" of them, call Rob Manfred and try to fix this thing together. But they won't do that.
Is that a cultural thing then?
It is the baseball union for 75 years or whatever it's been.
Well, I mean, as far as like
50 years,
this is only semi-related to that. But going back to the point of the Dodgers not saying anything or other clubhouses not saying anything, is that just how it is? Like, you don't talk about what's going on in baseball?
I would tell you the sanctity of the clubhouse is more important than the sanctity of the game.
So then at that point, I totally understand what you're saying. But if the sanctity of the clubhouse or the sanctity of protecting baseball and baseball players is at the utmost importance, does that then also help you understand as to why those guys didn't come out and say something from the beginning?
But they're happy to say it now.
Right.
But
now that it's out,
so
they don't have,
why don't they start
to
change the culture and say, hey, the sanctity of the clubhouse isn't as important as the respect for the game.
You're right.
That got broken.
That would be the ideal thing, right? That's what we all want. I think there's still a lot out there that we don't know about that we should hear.
Then let's start talking about what goes on in clubhouses. If once you break that wall, cool. Let's talk about how guys treat the people around them. Let's say the sanctity of the clubhouse is no longer that big a deal and see where it gets us, because I have a feeling once you look under that rug, we're going to be very unhappy with what we see.
Mm. Like what?
I mean, you want to find out about the real behavior of most athletes on a night-to-night basis?
Well,
I don't think the public's ready for that.
We've already heard all those types of stories.
I don't know that we've heard it all. I bet you we would be disgusted by a lot of what we heard.
Right, but I'm trying to follow where you're coming from here, because you're coming after the Dodgers guys for being fake tough guys. Is it just the Dodgers or is it everybody in general?
Specifically those guys, because they literally knew, and instead of going public or doing anything about it from a rules perspective, they just looked for a way to beat it.
I think that's a psychological thing. I think if you were to look at different cultures and groups, whether it's in baseball or not, there is a fear of being the one that says something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's no coincidence to me that once there was a whistleblower, other people felt like they could come out and talk. I think that's purely human psychology.
But when you start going and saying the types of things with the abrasive language they've had, judge's MVP was stolen, the commissioner didn't do enough, this and that, I don't know. I don't take you as seriously now, knowing that you weren't willing to say anything before.
But would they be speaking that had Rob Manfred sent punishments? I mean, it could be that they feel like there's this kind of like people's court situation happening.
Cool. Go talk to your union, which they will never do.
Hmm.
I'm glad they're saying it because it's giving us a lot of insight into the way everybody is feeling about it. I'm just not going to like give them a profile in Courage or anything.
Who is?
People are. Yeah, hey, I'm going to root for the Dodgers this year because I'm so happy with the way these guys are coming out and saying things the right way and being honest about it. No. Like, yeah, great. Good for them. Now they're being honest. Congratulations. I'm really proud of you.
You see the Daytona crash yesterday?
Yeah. I'll tell you, it really is amazing. First of all, Ryan Newman is always in these crashes. Like that guy, since back in the day when he drove the number 12 car, he gets in the worst crashes. I don't know why. But it's amazing how safe those cars are. If I hate to talk about it, if Daryl Earnhardt had been wearing his Hans device, he's fine. He's still alive today. And when you see the kinds of crashes that NASCAR drivers are able to endure, including the one yesterday, which is, it's brutal to see. I know he's hurt. He's in the hospital, serious condition, but it's non-life-threatening. That car essentially blew apart. And he walked away from it. He's going to end up being okay.
How do you walk away from the inferno aspect of it, though?
The fire retardant suits they have. And all, they have so many things. The Hans device, which keeps your neck it makes your neck immobile. The safer barriers. All these things they've put into that game to make it safer. It really is remarkable how those guys walk away from it.
Thanks for stopping by, Mike.
All right, guys. See you tomorrow.
Baseball's biggest star finally speaks up and does what the commissioner wants. That's next on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
I saw a great tweet over the weekend from our buddy Phil Mackey up in Minneapolis. You know, for the huddle, sometimes we bring in a guest who does radio in the city of the opposing team. Phil Mackey's a good radio host up in Minneapolis. He sent out a tweet. He said, Rob Manfred on ESPN just said he will send a memorandum to all teams discouraging retaliation against the Astros. He cited that throwing at Astros hitters is inappropriate and increased punishments will be in play, as opposed to zero punishment for the players who cheated. Basically, what Manfred is saying, and I tried to clarify this, is that Manfred is only interested in punishing the reaction to the offense, not the offense itself. What a joke, right? The offense itself is cheating. Not going to punish that. But we will punish you by reacting to the cheating.
I feel like he has no other choice but to say that, given the trajectory his defense of the team has already gone to, right? Like, that, I mean, what do you do? Just leave it up to... I'm saying you've already decided. You decided to give a blanket immunity, reportedly, in exchange for cooperation for this investigation. And, I mean, how do you move forward after that? Just say, like, all right, well, not up to me anymore. Like, if you're going to be a commissioner, you still have to enforce some kind of rule, even though it feels incredibly unfair to fans.
Then he needs to clarify that.
Well, he in this situation... You can't allow, if you're him at this point, you can't allow for the teams to take things into their own hands and essentially throw almost at every single batter at every single game that's going to come up this season, because that's what's going to happen.
Do you think
at least one bat? I think one batter every game, almost every game or every series for a new team, they will take their shot at the Astros.
Really?
Absolutely. I think every team in their own case is going to seek out some form of justice. And if that is what's going to happen, or that's the potential, because what we're hearing, the vitriol that we're hearing from all across MLB, from players and all of that, yeah, I definitely feel that that would be an absolute thing that would be on the table if Manfred didn't say this. I don't necessarily have a problem with Manfred saying that about players retaliating to the Astros. I'm on the same page with you, Tom, in the sense that I'm mad that Manfred has not done anything to punish the actual people behind this, like the real true culprits. Like we've talked with Salk, and Salk says, hey, you know, they punished the people that were directly responsible, that Manfred was communicating with. Hey, GM and manager, you need to stop this. Management needs to stop this cheating scandal from going on. You've been warned. It still continued to go on. But we all know. We all know and understand what the dynamic was at this point in time, that it wasn't just mandated from the GM or the manager, that this was player directed, that this was player managed, and that they undertook this and it became a life of its own. And so also we have the understanding of knowing that baseball is different, that a manager and that a GM and all that don't have the same power as they do in the NFL or the NBA or in other sporting leagues. So the players have a lot of run in what they get to do or not do. And that's why I find it ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous, that Manfred and Major League Baseball doesn't find a way to punish these players in some form or fashion. I talked about stripping world titles. If you don't want to strip world titles, all right, I can get on board with that. But some players need to face some suspensions. Like, how can they go scot-free when they were the ones that were directly contributing to the problem and they were overriding directives that they were getting and handing down from Major League Baseball as well, just as much as the manager.
I guess the problem is you've sacrificed truth, or you've sacrificed punishment and an opportunity to punish players in exchange for the truth about the scandal. Fine. But then that was the cost that you paid for that.
There's just
the report that there was blanket immunity offered. I should preface that. The assumption in the report is that blanket immunity was part of this investigation.
In exchange for information about what they did.
In exchange for cooperation and information and fine. But then at what true cost did you do that? So you aren't going to punish players. So then what does the truth do for you other than just bring everything to light and make people angry? Then moving forward, then it's okay, well, we're going to make sure other teams don't do this. Like, what did the truth really do? It's kind of like when you strike a plea deal, right?
Yeah.
And something comes out and okay, this person bargained and now they're not going to do time because we found out the truth of their crimes. Well, now it feels like no one gets punished. Although usually with a plea deal, there is some kind of punishment. It's just less severe than it normally would be.
If you're a witness against the mob and you've committed murder yourself, oftentimes you do still do hard time somewhere.
You would,
but you do a year or two, you just get a seriously reduced sentence.
Right, or they'll take something off the table. Here.
Right, so in this case, we'll say, you know, Altuve or whoever was the ringleader, Altuve, Bregman, Springer, they still should have gotten 30 games or whatever it was in exchange for their testimony.
So then what did your investigation give you?
Huh?
All it did is, but that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So then you, again, reportedly, so if you chose to sacrifice the punishment of players, and maybe he didn't want to deal with it in the first place. Maybe, like Salk said, the players' union would have been too much of a hassle that he knew, you know, I'm going to give them an opportunity to not be punished because I don't even want to get my hands in that. Like, it's going to be such a mess. I don't want to worry about it. And at least now I can get more cooperation if this is indeed what happened. But then what? You just have the truth of the investigation, and now the court of public opinion is really mad and no one can do anything, right? Like, where do you go with this?
I don't
know.
I think,
story.
You know what, Stacey? I don't know that there's like one thing we can point to, but it's always better when the truth is out there and we know it. I think there's value there, even if we can't like harness that truth, that whatever testimony, and say, okay, we're going to do this with it. The fact that we all know what happened matters. Like, there's value in that. Like, it's important for history, because even if we don't know what to do with it right now, it'll contextualize, I think, over time.
That's true. I agree with you there. It's just I understand why, and I think all three of us understand why fans and other players are wondering, okay, well, then what? Now we just know.
Right.
I'm glad we know, but there's this feeling of kind of being unsatisfied with that.
Do we put too much emphasis on value when it comes to Seahawks draft picks? We'll talk about that next. Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.